You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.
How do we become a sustainable world? As the stakes for our survival continues to rise, so does our global consciousness. We are in the midst of a great spiritual awakening and are laying the foundations for a happy, peaceful, just, and sustainable world. With clear vision, determination, and a positive attitude, we are making sustainability happen. The transformation is already underway. You are listening to Sustainable Futures. Welcome to Sustainable Futures. This is episode 48, and we're going to be talking with Tanya Patz of Vancouver Auto Cooperative Network.
For the current ratio, I just checked this morning, is 28 people per car.
Wow.
So
that's really good.
That is good, yeah.
That's coming up next. Stay tuned for Sustainable Futures. I'm Ryan Fletcher, and today our interview is with Tanya Patz. I'm going to jump right into it. It's a lengthy interview, and we're going to be talking about the Vancouver Auto Cooperative Network. Today we're going to be talking about the Cooperative Auto Network, and I have with me Tanya Patz, the Client Relations of Development Director.
Good afternoon, Ryan.
Good afternoon. So first, let's introduce the audience to the Cooperative Auto Network. What is it?
We started in 97 with two vehicles and 16 people with the idea to car share. And in fact, the founder is Tracy Axelson, and it was part of her school project. She was studying post-undergrad studies in community economic development here at SFU, and her school project was car sharing. She'd heard about it because it already existed in Germany and Switzerland,
mm-hmm.
and started it. First, you know, it was just in theory. I talked to people in various places, asked if they would be willing to share cars, if that would work for them, and then actually got funding for it. And so now we're a very successful, the first English-speaking car-sharing organization in the world.
Where was the original place where it started?
So Germany or Switzerland, depending on who you ask.
Okay.
Both in 91. So after that was Montreal,
mm-hmm.
Comunoto, and then us. So we're the first English-speaking one outside of, you know, anywhere else. Formal car-sharing. I mean, car-sharing is probably always... gone on since there were cars. You know, there's always
been,
hey, Dad, can I borrow the car? But this is a more formal car sharing
mm-hmm.
idea.
How does it work? What happens?
Right, so people could, because we're a co-op, in the beginning people could purchase shares and then be a member and use the car when they need it. Now you can choose that option, or there's other options as well, deposit free or the company car. But basically you take it when you need a car. So you would think about what kind of trip you're taking. What's it? How is it going to be? How's it going to work? Is it faster for me to walk today, take transit, or do I need a car? So then you book it and you online or over the phone,
mm-hmm.
and go to the car, drive it around, do your thing, bring it back to the same spot when you're done.
You know, what kind of location would
right.
the car be in?
Right. So at the moment we're in 8 municipalities around Metro Vancouver and Nanaimo on the island. And we have 235 vehicles at the moment. We have over 200 locations. Most locations have just one vehicle there. So you would access it. There's a lockbox and the car key is in it. And then
mm-hmm.
there's, for a year now, we've had onboard technology installed in the vehicles as well. So now you would fob in, and it will only allow you to drive the car if you've got it booked. Mm-hmm. So you drive it around and you always bring it back to the same spot when you're done. So then you're only paying for when you're using it. If you owned your own car, you'd be paying kind of all the time, whether you used it or not.
Right. Okay. And it's a share. So how's the share work? Is it's like a financial?
That's right. Share? So just like we pride ourselves on being a cooperative, BC's got a great reputation for co-ops, like, you know, Van City Savings Credit Union or Mountain Equipment Co-op. We strive to be like that. So we're kind of, ours is kind of in between what it would cost to be a member there and what it would cost to be a member at a housing co-op. It's $500 for the shares. So if you ever left, you get that back. So you pay that, and then you're a member, you've got a right to vote, you get the best rates, member plan rates, and then you're paying a little bit of admin fee per month. If you use the car, you're paying a bit per hour and then per kilometer.
And what's the cost go to? Does it go towards the vehicles, or is there also a for-profit element of
right,
this?
So the car co-op is a not-for-profit. Okay. But in order for it to continue to function, continue to grow successfully, continue to improve the fleet, then some of it would go towards that. So it's kind of in between a business and a society. That's the beauty of being a co-op. It gives us some freedom to set some money aside for a rainy day, but at the same time, it's definitely a not-for-profit enterprise.
And then there's also something called the company car?
Right. So the company car is a company, which technically is for profit, except that it's wholly owned by the car co-op. So really, it isn't. It's the daughter of the mother is not for profit. Because in the beginning with the car co-op, you purchased shares, so you'd have to be an individual to drive the car, and you'd be responsible for your own driving. So people were always using it for work, but the company car allows us to make that driving a little less gray. So you have a totally separate account where the company is responsible for the driving that the employees do under it, and that way it allows people to drive our cars without being members as well. So, for example, an architectural firm could be a client, but they wouldn't get a vote.
And how does responsibility come in if someone gets into an accident?
Right.
Something like that.
People always want to know about the worst case scenario.
Yeah, worst case scenario. Yeah.
We have a few options now for that. So the member or the client, so the driver, I'll use driver to refer to both, the driver's responsible for the first $500 of damage if they're at fault, deemed at fault by ICBC. The rest of it is covered by insurance. There are ways to avoid paying the $500. You can join the damage pool, or maybe you have a gold or platinum credit card that covers it. So there's ways to avoid that. So the damage pool, you know, people would pay $35 a year, and then if something happens, they can dip into the pool.
Okay. And if someone wanted to go an extended trip, like a vacation, is that something people would also use it for, or is it more just for working purposes?
I would say one of the myths about us is that people think we're only for the around-town trips.
Yeah.
We actually can work well for both, and it really depends on the season. So, for example, in the fall, car rental agencies will often have really great deals on. So then in that case, they may be better than us for certainly if you're going to Whistler for a day or Seattle for a couple days. But if you're going a bit longer distance, and then it would be something like, you know, if you're going to Kelowna for 5 days or more, we might be a better deal.
Okay. So we have someone on the line who is a car co-op member. We have Juan Xu. Welcome.
Hi.
So welcome to CJSF. And are you a Car Cooperative Auto Network user?
Yes. I've been using co-op cars since June this year, last June.
Okay. And
actually, Juan is one of our company car clients, so using it for work purposes, just like we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what do you use it for? Like, where do you go?
I am a research assistant for National Research Studies, so we use the car for field visits. We go to mainly in the Vancouver, Lower Mainland area.
Yeah. And how frequently do you use it?
We use approximately twice a week, or at least twice a week. And actually, we are going to use the car to drive across the border tomorrow for a conference.
Oh. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
I might want to ask Tanya about that
kind of scenario.
Going across the border?
Going across the border, yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, when we started, it was an issue. People,
yeah.
It sounds like this crazy commie idea. Americans get a little nervous. But, and in fact, the lockbox where the car key is kept used to be metal, so it would show up when they x-ray the car. And they
all
didn't
right.
like this mysterious little compartment we had that was built into the vehicle.
But it's not metal now?
No, now it's plastic, doesn't show up on the x-ray. And now they're much more familiar with car sharing. It's not a big deal at all to go across the border.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how did you first hear about this, Juan?
Actually, it's one of my colleagues. He works for David Suzuki Foundation. Apparently, he got the news about the co-op.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we started using co-op.
Word of mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people listening right now could also do some word of mouth and get some more people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you liking it so far?
Oh, I think it works great for us. And also the co-op car has the Prius car, those hybrid cars, especially for us to drive a lot of stuff throughout the week to go to visit different homes and save the environment as well, right?
Yeah, very good. Okay. Well, thank you for speaking with us, Juan.
No worries. Have a good day.
Okay.
So that was a researcher, which is a nice tie-in to some of what I've heard about the origins of this project. Can you tell us a little bit about how this developed?
Sure. The founder of the Cooperative Auto Network is Tracy Axelson, who is actually worked for the co-op for more than 12 years, left about a year ago. And she'd already finished her undergrad, I believe, in communications, and was doing a community economic development at SFU with Mark Roseland, Professor Roseland, I guess. He must still be here, right? So it was just an idea, a project, a school project that became something
kind of neat.
Much bigger. It was interesting because
Tracy... Giving inspiration to also the people listening.
Absolutely, yeah. Tracy's really an entrepreneur at heart. She doesn't like to be referred to as such, but she was 28 years old. She'd never run a business before and was looking for money, and people thought it was a crazy idea. Because it existed in Europe and Montreal, didn't mean that it was going to work here. Montreal's very European. People said... people will never get out of their cars. They're too attached to their cars. It's never going to work out here. And she proved them wrong.
So we started speaking a little bit about with Juan about the kinds of cars. What kinds of cars do people get?
What we realized now that we get together with other car sharing organizations more from around the world, CSOs we call ourselves, because some are for profit, some are not for profit, is that we have the most varied fleet in the world. Our fleet manager is jealous of the fleets elsewhere that might only have one or two types of vehicles in it. Much more easy to maintain. But our goal is to make car sharing work. That's our primary goal. And in order to do that, we need to provide a variety of vehicles. People sometimes just want to boot around and do a bunch of errands in those and be able to park in those small car only spots. You know, very handy. There's a Mini Cooper up here at SFU that'd be great for that. But there's other times when you might need a truck or you want to schlep some things, bookshelf or something.
So there are trucks?
Yes, there are small...
I bet you that'd be very popular. Is that working?
Actually, that's interesting. They're not popular when people don't need a truck. They're really popular around moving day and when people need to... Some people go to auctions all the time and will buy things, you know, beautiful fancy furniture. Other people use it for landscaping. It really gets used in different ways. But they're... quarter tons with short boxes and canopies. Most of them have canopies on them. But we also have minivans that seat seven or eight people. So you could pick up a bunch of kids from soccer or take a bunch of friends to Cypress skiing. You know, that's handy to have that too. And then we've got station wagons and hatchbacks, a variety. We found that there was a harpist who used to be a member. She's now performing her harp on cruises, doesn't need us anymore, but... You know, people would say, well, I don't know if this station wagon can really fit what I need it to. And I'd say, well, it fits a harp very easily, so it can probably fit your stuff.
That's a very common dilemma for musicians and bands.
Yeah, we do get a lot of musicians. Maybe they don't have an instrument as large as a harp, most of them, but but the amps and the guitars and all the stuff.
All that,
absolutely. A few of my coworkers who work for us, they're in bands, and that's what they use it for.
So that must be a very common thing then.
Yes, I would say the most common profession of a car sharer we've found to date is architect, which is kind of interesting. Either an architect or a landscape architect. I think because they're new urbanists. they really get the concept. I think they don't want to draw, you know, parking lots. They're ugly. They want to draw little shrubs and, and green roofs and stuff. I think that's why. But the next, you know, we also get a lot of musicians or people who work in the film industry or massage therapists who might go from, you know, client to client and need to take their table with them.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's so many things, yeah. There's a lot of things you can't do on transit.
That's right.
When you're carrying things around.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our vehicles are pet-friendly. Others are totally allergy-free. But, yeah, people like to take their dog to the beach or something like that. So it's anything that's harder to fit on transit, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there an environmental aspect to
Absolutely.
The origins of this?
That is the main point of car sharing for us, is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions as well as other non-point sources of pollution. So when we tend to take our vehicles to a car wash and all that soap and stuff goes down one drain in a key area, it's different from having people wash their cars outside their homes and having it go down, you know, various drains.
Right.
There's lots of, because we exist, there are a lot fewer parking spots needed in lots of buildings around the city. And so that, in some cases, we have directly contributed to green space by being able to, you know, have community gardens there instead or something. That's really the exciting part of this for me.
Yeah, I guess, because the beautiful thing is it's one car that's for however many people.
Yeah, the current average, I just checked this, or the current ratio I just checked this morning is 28 people per car.
Wow.
So
that's really good.
That is good, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because even people who own their own car and they say, well, you know, I share it with my neighbor or I share it with my partner and they think they're doing something great, that's only two or three people. And one of the biggest impacts is in the manufacturing of the vehicle. About 40-45% of the impact on our environment that the vehicle has is in the manufacturing
right,
process.
Yes.
So you might as well use it. It's already been made. Let's use it all the time. It's a machine. If it's well maintained, it doesn't need, you know, hours and hours of rest in between trips.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so we have another person on the line. It's John Desjardins, who has been using it for 6 months. Welcome.
Hi there.
So tell me, what purposes are you using the Vancouver Cooperative Auto Network for?
Well, primarily right now, I would say weekend shopping excursions and other situations where it's just not practical to take transit. I mean, most recently, I went to see the 3D IMAX version of Avatar at the Riverport in Richmond, which from where I live in SFU is about a two-hour transit excursion. So that was a good use of the car for me, but I find it very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm. And I guess to carry the groceries home would be the reason.
Yeah,
when you're doing the groceries.
And you know, just to have the flexibility of being able to make a lot of kind of errand type stops in a relatively compact time. Yeah,
right. Because so you can go wherever you need to go.
Those kinds of tasks up for the weekend, and generally, you know, that's the most efficient use of the vehicle.
And do you find it to be a convenient system? How do you go about booking it? Do you use the telephone or the internet?
I use the internet, and it's extremely convenient for me. There's one vehicle is just 2 minutes away from where I live. The other one, you know, if that one happens to be booked, the other one's, you know, just an extra 3 minutes or something. So there's two vehicles in pretty close proximity.
Where do you live?
Where I live. I live right up at SFU in what they call Universe City.
Yeah.
I guess if you're SFU radio, you know all about it.
Yeah. They're trying to be as confusing as possible, of course.
Ah, right.
University.
Yes, University. Very cute.
Yeah. Okay. And how about financially? Do you find it a good deal? Is it
Yeah, it's excellent. I find I spend about, well, I actually share the car with another person, you know, so, you know, we use it together and do a shopping trip together. And my average monthly expense is, I guess, usually less than $80. And that would be, you know...
So that's about the same as a fare card.
Weekend, yeah.
Yeah.
And so way, way cheaper than owning my own vehicle, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
And I also am a great believer in the environmental benefits of this system, but just from a personal economic standpoint, it's very good as well.
Yeah. And I think that when it really comes down to it, it needs to be that.
Yes.
Yeah. And what do you do here at SFU?
I'm actually the caretaker of one of the condominium complexes up here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add in the conversation here?
No, I'd just like to say, it's something I would strongly recommend that any of your listeners investigate as an option, and I certainly think it's... I'm very, very pleased with it, and it's worked out really well. I actually there's never been a situation where I really needed to get a vehicle and I couldn't get one.
Oh, that's so good to know.
Yeah. I don't know if that would be the case for everyone, but it's really worked out well for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much for being here with us.
You're very welcome.
Ryan, John was touching on availability there. That's one of the first questions people ask, because they want to know that the car is going to be there when they need it.
Right.
And it's not as the same as having your own car that's just sitting there anytime you need it. Uh-huh. But if you live in an area where, like he was saying, if the closest one to him isn't free, then the next closest is. And
right.
So, you know, you have a bit of variety there. You're in a good location for that to happen. And ideally, if you where you live and where you work, there are car co-op cars around there, then it can work really well.
Right, yeah.
So, for example, at SFU, we have, at the moment, it looks like 53 drivers who live up here. Their home address is up here on the mountain. And we have 3 vehicles up here. So that's smaller than a 20 per car ratio. But because it's... in an area where there aren't as many people and the transit isn't as great as something like downtown, that ratio works up here.
Right, and it's perfect for here because it's so far to go.
Yeah, exactly. You were saying that it's about the same price as a fare card. We certainly wouldn't want to ever encourage people to use us instead of transit. You know, it's about really creating a sustainable transportation network for yourself that where the car is part of that sustainability. It's instead of something that you're using all the time, you're sometimes walking, sometimes taking transit, sometimes cycling, maybe, or taking a cab or renting, and other times you're car sharing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like a very good option. I wanted to ask you about getting involved. How do people get involved?
Right, so how do they usually hear about us? Or
well, if someone wants to start using it today...
Right.
What do they do?
Right, that's a good question. The setup is we need to see their last 3 years of driving history. So they have to have been driving for 3 years or more. Mm-hmm. That means unsupervised. I think you have to be 19 or so before you could join us. So we need to see their last 3 years of driving history, whether it's from here in BC or elsewhere. And then there's an online orientation that they would do. So the website is car.coop without the hyphen. From there, they can go to an online orientation that will explain to them basically how to share with other people, all the niceties of sharing that make it work for everyone. And then once they've completed the online orientation and sent their docs in, they can come to us. We need to see people in person. So our office is downtown Vancouver at Pender and Granville, and they can make an appointment to come in for about 15 minutes or so to fill out some forms and show us their driver's license.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then
at that point, they would get a key and a fob.
And what about maintenance? There must be some...
Right, so we take care of all of that. I mean, that's really the beauty of this. I think when people hear the word co-op, sometimes they think, oh, this is for people who can't afford other ways of getting around. But actually, we have a lot of professionals with us, again, because it's that combo of doing something great for our environment and economical savings. Mm-hmm. So... I think people see it as a luxury, really. They love that they just get in the car, drive it around, and bring it back to the same spot. They are responsible for putting gas in, so always return with a quarter tank or more.
Okay.
And bringing it back clean. So, you know, like a Boy Scout motto where you leave something better than how you found it. So if someone left their, hopefully they're not using a paper coffee cup, but if they left it in the vehicle, so tossing that out so that the next person doesn't have it there. Maybe shaking out the mats or something. There's a few leaves on them. And then the rest we take care of. So repairing, maintenance, and damage, etc.
Mm.
And these prices include the parking. So the permanent parking where the car actually lives, that spot. Parking permits, which we have in some municipalities. as well as insurance and fuel. It's all included.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, so far as locations, we covered SFU, but what about in Burnaby?
Right.
What sorts of locations? How many locations, and what are some of those?
Right. I didn't add up the Burnaby locations before I came, but let me think. There's you're making me work. That's good. I know we have a couple of vehicles at Edmonds SkyTrain Station,
mm-hmm.
and we also have a couple at Highgate Village, which is about a 10-minute walk from there. We have a couple at a 10-minute walk in, or 7-minute walk in the other direction from Edmonds SkyTrain, a place called Green. We have a vehicle, a couple of vehicles there. And there's one at Metrotown, one at Patterson SkyTrain. And within a couple of months, we hope to have one at Brentwood.
Okay.
Is that still in Burnaby?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Oh, we have one at Gilmore SkyTrain.
Okay. So people in the north end do have something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true, actually. North Burnaby, we're not well established yet. That's very true. I guess Hastings and Willingdon.
Okay, that's a good spot.
So at the Safeway.
That would be the Gilmore one?
No, there's one at Gilmore SkyTrain. Because
that's very close to Gilmore. Well, it's fairly close to Gilmore.
Yeah, about a 10-minute walk or maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then at Hastings and Willingdon there at the supermarket there's a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
We're not on Capitol Hill yet, but we'll get there, you know. It's really better to start with little clusters and then move gradually outwards from, you know, every three blocks or so, add another one, so that people have a second and a third option nearby.
Right, so it's important for people to have more than one option. Is this something that's a goal?
That's ideal. So, for example, in Nanaimo on Vancouver Island, we have two vehicles now, and it's much easier to car share there when we started out with just one there.
Mm-hmm.
Because when your neighbor has it, there is no second choice.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're much happier there. And if you have these clusters and you move kind of outwards by a few blocks at a time, then you can start to add in a variety of vehicles. So after you have a couple of, you know, hatchbacks and a sedan with a trunk, maybe then you'd add a truck or a minivan next.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I guess there's also that word of mouth factor that travels at about the same geographical.
Yeah, that is that's true. You know, you're right. People walking by and see the car in its spot, and realize, hey, there's one right near me.
Mm-hmm.
But word of mouth has always been the most. I mean, we've always been a little bit weak on marketing. A lot of people don't know who we are, but word of mouth has always been the most successful way for us to grow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a good way to grow too, because people will talk if. Well,
yes.
Given that the word of mouth is good word of mouth.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they say no. All news is good news or something. There is no bad publicity. But, for the most part, people are really happy with us. The very first trip I took, the vehicle wasn't there. So it can happen, you know. And I thought, oh, I don't like this. I don't think this is going to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 97. But then I didn't have that happen to me for like another 5 years.
Oh, so that's...
So, you know, about once every 5 years, that's not so bad.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. This program is called Sustainable Futures. This is an interview with Tanya Pez with Vancouver Cooperative Auto Network.
Okay, so, yeah, we have someone else on the line. We have Ryan Quering. Hello, Ryan.
Hi.
So, you're a user of the company car, I understand.
Yeah, I'm a company car user, and I have a personal account, too, which I use quite frequently.
A personal account? What's that now?
Well, when you sign up for the company car, you can use Cooperative Auto Network for personal use, too. So, I mean, I use it for...
Oh, so you got both.
Yeah, I have an account for the radio station and for myself as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're with CJSF.
I am.
Oh, wait, you're the Ryan I see every day.
Of course.
Okay, so how's your experience been?
Well, I've been using it for about 2 years now, and I use it probably anywhere from 2 to 6 or 7 times a month. Mostly for personal errands, and it's free to use from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., so I quite frequently use it just to go for drives with my friends, and it's good for that, and it's very inexpensive compared to actually having a car. I've had a very good experience. I did get into a small accident. I had to pay $500 deductible, which was not great, but my fault. So,
You're a very rare person that will say it's my fault.
Yeah. And I live on Commercial Drive. There's a lot of cars around there. So it's great. There's always a car available.
Okay, so it's a very well-populated area with the,
the
company cars. Have you ever thought of using it for road trips or ever done anything like that? Is that something you can do?
I've looked into that a few times for both the company car, for using it for CJSF and for myself. And it doesn't usually, and they say this on their website as well, and they'll tell you this, that it's not quite cost competitive with actually renting a car. No, I haven't used it for that purpose.
Okay. And how long have you been using?
About 2 years. About 2 years.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No. I mean, I think it's a great service, and it's a nonprofit, and I think they do a lot of good work for keeping people from owning cars and allowing them still to run errands and drive around and have a car when they need it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ryan.
All right. Thank you, Ryan.
Do you like fast cars?
Well, you know, we officially, I should really reply that we expect people to follow all the rules of the road, including the new one of not being able to use your cell phone while driving.
Yeah. I wonder about professional people like taxi drivers.
Oh,
they
actually
depend on that.
Taxi drivers would.
They must be exempt.
They might be. I don't know. But I think what's interesting is it's not when you're going fast that you really want to use your cell phone. It's when you're stuck in traffic and it's not going anywhere.
Yeah,
and
so
you
bored.
Think, I'm not doing anything. It's not going to be unsafe. I might as well call my friend and catch up with them. And now you can't. Which is good. It'll make people think about being stuck in traffic more.
Right. You can review all the rules of the road while you're there in traffic.
Yeah, exactly.
Just bring a list with you.
Yeah.
Like any normal person would do.
Yeah.
Some of your own experiences with the car, has there been any kind of unusual occurrences?
With me, I would say not so much. I knew we were, as my brother would say, Billy Big Time. We'd reached a certain status when one of our cars rear-ended another one of our cars. Then you know you have a lot of them on the road when that starts to happen. I was like, wow, I was so happy. I was like, I mean, everyone was fine. I was like, wow, that means you've really reached a certain status, you know, when you start hitting your own car. And then there was one time a member, kind of got confusing for them. They had a dark green sedan, and they took it to the airport. This is back before the Canada Line, to pick up their friend. Amazingly enough, they remembered the aisle they had parked in. But they went to get their friend from the airport, and they got back to the vehicle, and it was now unlocked. And there was a bottle of wine in a brown bag on the console.
Yeah.
And they thought, why is the car unlocked? I'm quite sure that I locked it up. And why is there this wine bottle here? This unopened wine bottle, of course. And they tried to start the car, and it wouldn't start. So as it turns out, it was another dark green sedan of the exact same make and model, also one of ours. It was parked in the same aisle, just a few doors down.
Oh.
And at the exact moment, that person who had the second car came and saw someone sitting in the car and said, hey, what are you doing there? That's my car. And so the first person realized why the car wouldn't start, because it wasn't the exact same one. So those kind of things can happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But now I guess with our onboard technology, that's less likely to happen.
Onboard technology? What's that?
Right. So we've installed these value systems in our vehicles that will keep track of some stuff. They do not have GPS in them, so we're not keeping track of where our drivers are going.
Mm-hmm.
So if I book a car, on my account, there's only my name. I'm just the only person in my household. And so unless I add a driver to my account, which I can do just for that booking if I wanted to, when I fob in, if I fobbed in at the right time on the right car, then the driver's door will unlock and it will allow me to engage the ignition. If I've fobbed in to the wrong car, it won't work for me. And that has really cut down on the number of, because human error can play a factor, right? So before we had that, people would sometimes take the wrong car, and that's just not happening anymore, so that's great. And it also helps us keep track of the kilometers, how far they've gone. So that all that information can be relayed, you know, via cell phone wave to the computers at our office.
Mm-hmm.
That's my artsy way of explaining it anyway.
Yeah. So you keep track of the distance people travel?
Right. So some people pay just per hour, the deposit-free folks or the company car folks, up to a maximum of 150 or 200 kilometers.
Okay, whereas, so it's not a flat rate. It's a... Or is it a flat rate?
Well, they... So, for example, the company car, it's $6 an hour weekdays. That is a flat rate. If they take it for 4 hours, let's say from noon till 4, that's going to be $6 times 4 hours, $24 plus tax. And that includes gas and insurance and everything. Whereas members pay $2.50 an hour. And I think it's 35 cents on the first 35 kilometers. And after that, 20 cents a kilometer. So because they're paying per kilometer, then we do keep track, yeah.
Mm-hmm, right. Okay. Is there anything you can't use the car for?
Well,
like, say you wanted to move an elephant.
I was going to say, if you want to move a body, you're not allowed.
Oh, okay.
Because that actually contravenes, I think, more than the Motor Vehicle Act. So it's okay if you've murdered someone. You can join the car co-op if you have. But if you're using it, if you have in the past convened the Motor Vehicle Act and use it to move a corpse, then that's not allowed.
Okay.
Elephant, yeah. I don't know how many people fit in a Volkswagen these days, but not very many elephants do.
Okay. Is there anything else, though, in addition to that?
Oh, what you can't do with it. Oh, you can't go off-road racing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sign up for the Indy 500.
You can't race in it, pardon me. It's not just off-road. You can't go off-road with it, and you can't race with it anywhere. I should be clear.
Okay, so yes, you can't go off-road. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, some logging roads are fine. But
I think we briefly mentioned pets, but what's the stipulations for pets?
Right. So they have to be in the carrier.
And that's like the cage?
Yeah, exactly. Have? The pet carrier. I think pet owners don't like calling them cages, but they kind of are. So for a cat, for example, the only time the cat's going in the cage is when he or she's going to the vet.
Yeah.
So in that case, the pet would be in the carrier.
Mm-hmm.
In our allergy-free vehicles, we decided if we're going allergy-free, we're going all the way. So there's no pets, peanuts, perfume, pollen, and no paisley allowed.
Okay.
Polyester, maybe not. but yeah, so that means no open food in the car, because we do have members whose kids might have a severe peanut allergy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a pet in a pet-friendly car, then you'd want to vacuum it afterwards just to make sure that even the dander, pet owners don't tend to see their own pet's hair in the same way that other people notice it.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd want to vacuum afterwards, etc. And if you have a larger dog, you could pick up the car, take it to your place, put the big pet carrier in, and then get him to jump in, that kind of a thing. Because it's quite unsafe having pets loose in the vehicle. I've seen that in other people's cars.
Yeah.
It makes me nervous.
Me too. Some people might be familiar with Zipcar. Are they considered a competitor, or how's that?
I guess so, yeah. Because we're the first English-speaking car co-op in the world, we've helped a lot of car co-ops set up, or not car co-ops, I should say, car sharing organizations set up all over the place, all over the world, like on four continents so far. And years ago, we helped Zipcar start up in Boston, and we also helped Flexcar start up in Seattle. Since then, Zipcar they went to Toronto, and then they also came to Vancouver, and then they bought Flexcar. So they're the largest in North America. They're a for-profit American company that's here. Their model is different from ours, I would say. We grow by one or two or three cars at a time as demand is needed in a sort of a more sustainable manner.
Mm-hmm.
They came to Vancouver and plopped down 100 cars to see if it would work, kind of a thing. So it's actually been great for us. That phrase, competition is good for business, is definitely true. It's not just a saying.
Okay, so how's that the case?
Well, people know more about car sharing. I mean, they spend a lot of money on marketing, and that's been good for us. The more people are aware of car sharing, the more they're likely to check them out and us out. Our fleet at the moment is about 3 times the size of theirs, and some of our plans are half the price of theirs, and we have twice the insurance. And we're Canadian and local and not-for-profit, so there's it's a pretty easy choice, I think. But it's great to have them around. And in fact, there are a lot of people, I don't know about a lot, but there are some of our members have joined Zipcar as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just about having choice when you're choosing your transportation modes. If we all drove all the time, we'd be stuck in traffic more. and then we'd feel like we didn't have any choice at all. And I know I sound a bit like Professor Gordon Price right now when I talk about choice and transportation, but he's right about that. First of all, some trips are multimodal, but when we have many choices in transportation, then we're better off. Sometimes it's faster to get around on your bike.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the people who have joined both, you know, because we're less expensive and have more insurance, they're more likely to go to our website first and see if we've got a vehicle available. And most of the time we will. But maybe, you know, Saturdays, noon to 6 is kind of the busy time. So maybe last minute on a Saturday, they might check and we don't have anything near them available. Then they could go to the Zipcar site and see if they have something. So mm-hmm. It just gives them more options.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Let's have another song. Let's have something that's kind of fun.
Take you riding in my car. Take you riding in my car. The horn in my car goes beep, beep. The horn in my car goes beep, beep. The horn in my car goes beep, beep. Take you riding in my car. The door in my car goes clickety-clack. The door in my car goes clickety-clack. The door in my car goes clickety-clack. Take you riding in my car. Take you riding in my car. Baby in the back goes wah, wah. Baby in the back goes wah. In my car. Take you riding in my car. The trees and houses roll on by. Trees and houses roll on by. The trees and houses roll on by. Take you riding in my car. Take you riding in my car. Engine goes. Engine goes. Riding in my car, take you riding in my car, 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 let's go. Take you riding in my car. Take you riding in my car, everybody now.
And that was Terry Hendricks from Celebrate the Difference, a children's album. That song is originally by Woody Guthrie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Interestingly enough. It occurred to me now, this is an interesting scenario for car companies as well. How does the relationship with the companies happen when you're getting these cars to have for people?
So you mean the manufacturers?
Yeah, the manufacturer. And
well, we don't buy directly from manufacturers yet. That's probably a fantasy mm-hmm. of ours. I think we have to have a broker license or something like that.
So you go to a car lot?
Yes. Sometimes we'll buy a used car that might be like a year or two old, or we'll buy them brand new. And mm-hmm. we go to a variety. We like to keep them all on their toes.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of things are people generally looking for in a vehicle right now? Is that something that you interview people about, or?
That's interesting, actually. Our two biggest priorities are always high safety standards and excellent fuel efficiency.
Right.
Everything else is kind of secondary, although now we do have, with the onboard technology, we want all the vehicles to have power locks as well.
Mm-hmm.
So most of our vehicles have power locks, power windows, air conditioning, you know, CD player, what do you call that, little plug-in for the MP3 player?
Right. Yeah.
It's adapter or something. Well, it doesn't have the adapter, but that kind of thing. So we also want to keep our variety. So sometimes we're looking for a trunk, or sometimes we're looking for a little hatchback. Depends on the size. But it's certainly become clear to us over the years which manufacturers have long-lasting vehicles and which not so much.
Yeah.
So,
so you just kind of see from that perspective, well, they would really love to have probably a good relationship.
Oh, yeah.
With something like this.
Oh, yeah. We're one of their best customers, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
We buy a lot of vehicles.
Because it's great advertising for them.
Yeah, that's true, too. What's interesting is that more of my friends who do go and buy cars, I think they're too embarrassed to tell me when they're buying a car. They feel ashamed or something because they know where I work. But I'm surprised they don't ask me what kind to get because, you know, when you have six Ford Foci and the engine and the ignition goes on all of them, six out of six, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they don't ask me first.
Sometimes the timings of these things is very suspicious, too.
Yeah.
It'll happen right exactly the day the warranty is gone.
The day before, or the day after.
Yeah. Okay. How did you get involved with the co-op as an employee? Like,
was this I was a member first. I really liked the idea. I actually said it took me a number of months to save up the $500. I think that year I didn't go on vacation. I joined the car co-op instead.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad I did. They still have my $500. You know, if I ever leave, I'll get that back.
Mm-hmm.
But that was in 97. A few months later, I guess I joined the board. I kind of had my eye on it. I saw it having a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the board for about a year when then I was hired to work there.
So. I just want to interject here. We're talking with Tanya Paz.
Yep.
From the Cooperative Auto Network, and I'm Ryan Fletcher.
Thank you.
Can go back.
Oh, yes. We got to remember to do that every now and then.
Yeah.
So I got a call from Tracy. She knew I was looking for work, and I took a huge cut in pay, like huge, many years. But
yeah.
You know, a lot of my friends were like, "What are you doing there?" You know, because this is before we had onboard reservation systems. So you would take the binder with all the bookings in it and the cell phone home at night, and you would basically just work 4 days straight, where you would answer the calls day or night as they came in. People would sometimes, you know, call.
So you were like a
odd hours,
like a coordinator, like you would take calls.
Yeah,
so I want this car.
That's right.
At this time, yeah.
Because the only way to make bookings at the time was, this is back in the olden days, was to call us. So all bookings, you know, were open 24/7. So all bookings were made through one person because there's only one binder. One piece of paper that all the bookings are written on. So we've really moved quite far from that model now. We now have about 25 employees and a bunch of office space at Granville and Pender downtown. And that doesn't even include some of the people who car jockey for us. So they might be on contract and take the vehicles to the garage for us or take them to the auto body shop for us.
Mm. Car jockey, eh?
That's what we call them. And then we have car parents, too. So in Nanaimo, for example, on Vancouver Island, we're not there. So we have a car parent who takes the vehicle to, you know, looks after it for us.
Okay. Takes it for adoption.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we should call it, adopting the car.
Mm-hmm.
Except cars are not really people. That's what I shouldn't slip into.
Yeah, right, yes.
Because people are too attached to their cars, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much that people think car status, you know.
They should be a little more free and easy with their car.
Yes. Like,
you know, lots of different cars.
It's a machine.
Be loose.
It comes and goes. It doesn't last forever. And it's not as important as people or animals.
Mm, true, yeah. Yeah. Say someone listening, and I'm sure there's lots that are looking for work and want something interesting to do like that, what would they do?
Right, so we're always kind of looking for call center coordinators. I have to say, in these, what do they call it, economic downturn, these hard times, we have hired about 5 people in the last year. We seem to do well no matter what is going on, but when there's an economic downturn, people start to think about how much their car is really costing them. Most people don't have a clue. And so we're kind of always expanding, and call center coordinators, anyone can apply at car.coop. I guess the best thing for them to do would be to send a resume care of Annika White at our email address, info@cooperativeauto.net.
Now, what's the spelling on White? Sometimes that's a little bit different.
Yeah, no, it's just like opposite of black. It's W-H-I-T-E, and Annika is A-N-N-I-K-A.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll put mine in.
Yeah, we're a union shop, too, in case that matters to you. I'm sure it does.
Yeah, definitely. It matters a lot.
Yeah.
That might be the answer to my next question, actually. Why was it like you took a a big jump in pay downwards to do this.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is back when there were three of us working there, and we were just starting up and trying to make it work. So, you know, that was those were different times, I guess. Now we actually have medical and dental, and it's much more
back
civilized.
Then it wasn't, yeah. What interested you so much to be interested in taking a cut in pay to do a different job?
Well, I had been working for the Co-op Housing Federation of BC, and I was in the co-op sector, and I love the idea of co-op housing because it's mixed, income. So you're not building ghettos. You have people of a variety of social economic backgrounds living in one place together, and not always in harmony, but sharing, sharing in some way. That was very fruitful for me in one sense. On the other hand, what I saw as our largest priority was our environment. And I heard David Suzuki speak right around the time I started to work for the car co-op. And he was talking about the biggest chunk of the pie, which was for burning up, greenhouse gas emissions. And it was transportation, and it was personal transportation. It was like light truck and cars. It was the biggest problem. And I thought, this is exactly where I need to be right now. This is where I can hopefully get people out of their cars and help them change their behavior. It requires a change in behavior, and that's a lot trickier than, just putting your recycling out on the curb or something.
Mm-hmm, right, and it's deeper.
Yep, more of a commitment. And again, moving away from that car as status, or my car is a reflection of me or something.
Well, I'm my bicycle.
Excellent.
Yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to bring into the conversation? We're on our way out here.
I don't know. This has been a lot of fun, actually. We talked about the sustainable transportation network. We talked about the goofy things that can happen. Well, friends of mine called me up to ask me if any of our vehicles had a one full seat in the front. They don't make them like that anymore. They're always bucket seats in the front. And
right,
she wanted to take her girlfriend to the drive-in.
Oh.
And I got to say, they don't make cars like that anymore. So I had to say, no, they all have the bucket seats. So that's something that doesn't
something
work as
look
well.
Something to look for. Yeah,
exactly. The three cars at SFU are at two are at Universe City, one at Cornerstone and one at the Verdon building. And one is closer to the students. It's the Madge Hogarth building.
Mm-hmm. When people get to the website, then what kinds of things will I see?
So at car.coop, you have an option to click on the company car if you're looking for something for your organization. Frequently asked questions is a good place to start, as usual. There's a couple of choices. They can be a member of the car co-op, or they can try deposit free. And with deposit free, they're just paying $50 a year, and there's no money down. So it costs more, but it can be a great way to get started.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much
for being here
with us.
Well, it was a pleasure.
Okay. So you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, and I've been interviewing Tanya Paz, and this is Ryan Fletcher.
Thank you for listening to the program today. I hope you enjoyed it. You can catch every episode of Sustainable Futures on radioforall.net. So just go to www.radio4all.net and put Sustainable Futures in the search engine, and you'll be able to catch previous episodes of the show. So this is episode 48, and I do update those periodically. Thank you again for listening, and I am wishing you a sustainable future.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca. Or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM, www.cjsf.ca.